Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Unlimited Realities with Lisa Zimmer. I am your host, Lisa. Thank you so much for joining us today. Today we have a guest, author Betsy Otter Thompson, who wrote Walking Through Illusions. And we're going to talk to her in a little bit about where we go when we're in an elusive state and we're kind of like in walking in a fantasy land and really need to ground ourselves. What I really loved about her book is that it came from the heart. She speaks a lot from the heart, and not as the heart as a pumping organ of blood flowing through our body, but also as an emotional unit that we use for our creativity, how we are authentic and genuine, and how we come across to others. So, Betsy, thank you so much for joining us today on Unlimited Realities.
Thank you. I loved
your book, Walking Through Illusion.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, thank you. I love having you, and you have quite a history. You have a lot of experience in both radio, television, and even with Warner Brothers behind the scenes. So now you're in front of the scenes more on a creative level. Was that a difficult shift for you to make in being from a person who kind of like orchestrated everything from behind the scenes and then really putting your energy and your juice into a creative aspect and really coming forth? Was that difficult, or was it always kind of like a little soul call for you and you just kind of jumped on board with it?
Well, you know, Lisa, it was difficult while I told myself I didn't want to be doing it. But the truth of the matter is that it was exactly what I needed at the time. In hindsight, I realized that it was a really exactly what I needed, because the job, when I finally got a job in the entertainment business in California, first of all, I was very poor, almost having become a bag lady, and so financially it was a gift from God, and also it was all about taking responsibility, which was the biggest challenge I've ever had in my life, because I spent the first half of it blaming everyone else for my problems. And in a job like this, working for the head of a company, I had to take responsibility. No matter how embarrassing or difficult it got, I had to grit my teeth and take it. And so even though I thought that working as a secretary was the last thing I wanted to end up doing, I had a college degree, and I thought it was, I always heard, you know, I should be doing something more, and I heard that ugly voice inside of me telling me, you deserve better than this. And so that tried to disgruntle me. But the truth of the matter was that it was a great gift. It also helped me with my writing skills, because I did a lot of writing for my boss. And so it was the perfect thing for me. And when I finally decided that, then I enjoyed it a lot.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. And, you know, isn't it true that we're put in these situations often that there's skills we're learning or we're developing that we have no clue 5, 10, 15 years down the road how that's going to influence us or support us later on down the road. And when you were talking about, it's interesting because your book is so optimistic and so positive and so full of light and love. It's difficult for me to imagine that at some point in your life you were actually a tad pessimistic, perhaps?
Yes.
Maybe a little negative? I mean, was that something that maybe was a little bit of...
Yes, I mean, was it true? It's true. I had a mother who was extremely negative, who, you know, the glass was always half empty, and it was what, you know, it was, she was always focused on what wasn't the way it was supposed to be. You know, the things were missing, things were lacking, and it was, so I grew up with that, and I had a terrible time, because even as a child, I felt that there was something that I was missing, there was some positive. I didn't want to hear her negativity, but how that acted out for me, or played out for me, was that, I kept thinking she wasn't the mother I needed. She wasn't the mother I was supposed to have. But, of course, we were perfect mirrors of each other, because she was always thinking to herself I wasn't the daughter she wanted. So we were, at that time, without even realizing it, perfect mirrors of each other. And I went through the first half of my life blaming everyone. I blamed her. I blamed my ex-husband for the predicament I was in. And all that ever happened was that I drew people into my life who were ready to blame me for everything. So it wasn't any pathway to bliss, I can tell you that. But it was certainly a big contrast when I finally did begin to take responsibility And part of that taking responsibility was taking responsibility for the fact that I did have this gift of being able to talk with spirit, which I had amazingly enough discovered at the age of 5. And I had connected because my mother was always talking about her grandmother, who she was very close to and who she loved very much, and she said that I looked a lot like her. And I thought, wow, I look like someone my mother really loves. And I thought that was a definite asset, and I thought that I would talk to her and see if I was like her in other ways. And so I didn't tell anybody I was going to try to talk to her, so nobody told me I couldn't. And I had these lovely conversations for a couple of months, and I don't remember exactly what they were about, but they were very comforting, and I was enjoying them. And I thought that if I could do this, then everybody could do this. So I went to my older sister, and I told her what I was doing, and I asked her who she spoke to. And that was my first indication of how the rest of the world was going to react to this gift. And she teased me unmercifully for weeks, and so I was terrified that she would tell other people, and they would react as she had, and so I completely dropped it. So when I finally got to this point in my life where I began to take responsibility, this was something else I decided to take responsibility for. And I was very poor at the time. I was in a one-room apartment in Glendale, California, and it was roach infected. And I was not miserably unhappy, but I was very poor, and I had heard the ideas that were in the Course of Miracles, but I hadn't really applied them to my life yet. And
right.
So I said a prayer one night that I was willing to acknowledge this gift and I was willing to use the gift, but I needed a job to support me while I did. And 3 weeks later, I had the job at Castle Rock Entertainment. I was the second person hired and stayed with the man I worked for the next 18 years, and I was able to retire at that time. So I did, which was 6 years ago. So it's been a completely different story the second half of my life than the first half of my life.
That's interesting. I can relate a lot to, you know, being very young and having that connection with spirit and not understanding that it was different, and especially not understanding that everyone wasn't able to access that. I walked through my life, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 with the same thoughts. So I totally get that, and I understand. And ironically, I went to my older sister and talked to her as well.
Really? Oh, wow. I love
yes.
that. And how did she react?
It was interesting, and we laugh about it now because the answer that she gave me was pretty, shall we say, Catholic. And so we laugh about it now because neither of us, you know, are advocates of Catholicism by any means, but we respect, you know, the religion itself. But it's ironic because she's very much into spirituality and intuition and metaphysics and all of that. And so it's an interesting tug. But you also get in a lot in regard to your book. You have many stories here with characters from the Bible, and I want to get into that a little bit, because was this, would you call this a channeling of sorts of information in what created the dialogue that came through in the book, or
yes.
how was that accessed for you? What did it feel like? Explain to our listeners a little bit about your process.
Well, the process actually began at the 5, as I said, and then at 9, the Ouija boards came out, and believe it or not, our family got one like every other family was getting one, and my sisters and I couldn't wait to play because it sounded eerie to us, and we were into, you know, haunted houses at that point. And so we sat down, and the pointer started moving, and then, of course, the first thing we did was accuse each other of faking the results. But pretty soon, it was excruciatingly slow for three active children. And I was the only one sitting there playing with this board, and then I panicked again, thinking that this was what I had been humiliated for before. And so I stopped playing, and that was it. And then when I was in California, it began again with my son. He was out there in music school, and he was over for dinner one night, and we were reminiscing about my childhood and his childhood, and I happened to bring up the story of the Ouija board with him, and we had a big laugh over it. But to my surprise, he gave me a Ouija board a couple of weeks later for my birthday. So I told him he had to come over and use it because, in my understanding, it was a game that had to be played by two or more people. And so he came over, but It took us an hour or 4 hours. It was 4 hours to get one sentence, and it was a beautiful sentence, and something like, "In all that you do, say, and think, you are the love of God now and forever." But it was 4 hours, and my son said, "You know, that's it for me." So the next day I thought, well, I'll try it by myself and see what happens. And the first message I got was, "Welcome home." And I was hooked after that. I get chills when I say that because it's like, it seems like I relive it every time I say that. Mm. But and so then it was a process of getting, understanding how you had to use the Ouija board, because it had a very bad reputation at the time of being evil. And I had to come to the realization that it was a piece of cardboard, and that it was just as silly to call a cardboard evil as it was to call a dish rag evil. It was a tool, and it was up to me how I used it. And I believe that gifts are given in the spirit of free will, and they can be used in whatever way the user wants to use them. And I always give the example of, for instance, the gift of oration was used one way by Churchill and another way by Hitler. The gift of movie making was used one way to create Gone with the Wind and another way to create child pornography. So it's all back to that idea of taking personal responsibility for what you do with your gift. And so there was a long process of learning that, and also coming out of the closet about it, because people sort of had this weird idea about Ouija boards. And through the
It still does exist. I mean, about any tool or anything that's off the grid in regard to, normal type of procedures with spirit or God, there's always going to be. I think there's always going to be that judgment, don't you?
I guess so. But what's happened was, as I used it over and over again, finally it became cumbersome, and I used a legal pad with just a piece of paper with a hole cut in it, and used that, and it worked perfectly. And then when I was away from that, I used my palm, and now I hardly ever use it. So it was just, I've come out of the closet about it, because when I, that's how I got started, because when I started these radio shows and I was like very nervous, and what I heard from Spirit was, there's nothing to be nervous about, because all you have to do is tell the truth. So then when I said, well, okay, all I have to do is tell the truth, then okay, here we go. And so it's been easier, much easier, since I just said, I'm going to tell it like it is, and the chips will fall where they may.
And that's such a great simple statement for every part of living, because there's so much pretense that is a natural state people tap into, thinking they need to sell themselves, their ideas, their intelligence, their compassion, whatever it is they're trying to sell, instead of just being what they are in that moment. And if they are a kind person, you're going to see that there's moments they do get upset. They do get a little pissed off. And you know what? That doesn't take away from their kindness. It just is what it is. And so I really appreciate the fact that you're bringing this to the forefront in regard to taking the Ouija board in and of itself as a tool. I, of course, as a child used it, but at the other point of you moving through your tools, when did you, you have this job, you left almost a homelessness state, got this job, which was obviously a blessing and had to have been such a gift to you at the time, and then you decided or moved into a realm of thinking of taking responsibility, because you had to take responsibility. You shifted from an aspect of blame and victimization into taking responsibility. At that point, when you started to step into taking responsibility for your actions and your happiness or unhappiness, did you find that your awareness, your inner voice, your guide, your spiritual self, your intuition kicked in? Did it kick in more at that point?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, because when you take responsibility, you are really what you're saying is that I'm not powerless anymore. The power is in me. And as soon as you say the power is in me, you know, if I got myself in this mess, then I can jolly well get out of this mess. You know, what I created, I can discreate and recreate something else. And so that's when everything changed. And when I started this writing, I had self-published the four books, and then I thought to myself, well, what is it I really want to know now? What do I want to learn about? Who am I curious about? And I was always curious about Jesus. I had been raised Episcopalian, but I hadn't been in the church for years. I'd left very disillusioned. And So I said, well, what do I have to lose? I just ask questions and see what I get. And I didn't do any research about Jesus because I wanted it to be what I heard, and I didn't want to be influenced by what other people might believe. So I just sat down and started asking questions, and I didn't realize it would be one book, let alone three books, but that's how it's turned out because this is the second in a trilogy. And so I just started asking Jesus questions and wrote the answers down, and that's and it was sometimes not what I expected to hear, but it was I gave myself this freedom to let it be what it was by telling myself, if I don't like what I hear, I don't have to share it with anybody. I don't have to.
Right.
I can just drop it, and that's the end of it. So with that kind of freedom, giving myself that kind of freedom, I just really, it just sort of blossomed and became what it became. And then after I had finished the first book in the trilogy, I was actually sitting down with the publisher, and he hadn't said he wanted to publish it, but he was talking to me about it, and he said, well, where's the research? And I said, well, I didn't do any research. And he said, well, Betsy, you have to do research. So I went home and I did research. And what happened was that I realized that everything I had written was backed up by the research I did. So that was kind of reaffirming and fun. But the research was done after the book. I know it's really backwards, but that's how it happened for me for all of my books, all the three books.
Well, I think that creative process is so individual because it's, you know, it's how you move through things. I mean, I know when I write, I have an ADD brain. So when I write, an ADD brain takes over, and I'm all over the place. And then I have to go in and dissect and fix and pull and pop, you know, polish. So it's, I understand that the process is individual.
I don't want you to think I don't do that too. There is always editing. I am never so arrogant to say that my work doesn't need editing, but it isn't about changing the ideas; it's just making them run smoother, which I'm sure is what.
Sure, sure,
yeah.
Of course. And when you talk about your book to people, how do you describe your book? And like to somebody like me who understands, you know, spirituality, it's you wouldn't have to define it, but for someone, you know, Joe Smith, who's an electrician, who may not understand what you're talking about when you even say the word illusion, you know, to him it's almost like a mirage. How do you explain your book to others?
Well, I say that illusion, first of all, is something that is here today and gone tomorrow. It's anything that isn't around. It's temporary. It's temporary. Even our bodies are temporary. Buildings are temporary. Actually, the Earth itself is temporary. So anything that is temporary is the illusion. And we come here our spirits come here in our temporary bodies to experience matter, which is temporary too, to recognize what is real or that which is felt. So I believe that for something to be real, it has to be real whether we are in form or out of form. And the only thing that's real in both places is emotion. So I believe that emotion is our reality life. And when I think back over my childhood, and I'm sure when you think back over yours, you remember the things that affected you emotionally. There's millions and millions and millions of moments that we don't remember because nothing really terribly significant was happening in them in our emotional growth. But anything that affected our emotional growth, we really remember. And so that's what the book is about the people who lived then, 2,000 years ago, alongside Jesus, and what they were experiencing and how it was about their emotional growth, too. And I believe that if you went back 10,000 years and talked about the people who lived then, it would be about their emotional growth, too, because that's the only thing that, I mean, the soul is evolving, our emotional selves are evolving, and so we are living in the illusion at the time that we believe our heart can expand. And so that's what the book is about, these people and the lessons they had, which resemble all the lessons that we have, and just to show that it doesn't matter what time in history you are living, the challenge is the same, and Jesus' challenges were the same.
Okay, and you also have, within your writing, you have a lot of the merging with the lessons that Jesus provided while teaching, and a lot of it comes from the merging of the energy of Jesus is what I felt throughout your book. Do you feel like this is
a connection that you can create in your writing for others to feel the power of spirit or to tap in. I mean, you know, there's people who resonate with Jesus, and then there's people who, you know, look at Jesus in different contexts, whether it's, you know, how culturally or religiously or just belief system. For you, there's a very personal essence, a very personal connection that you have with Jesus, obviously, in writing this book. And the merging of the energy is very indicative in your writing. Do you have this as an essence that you feel? Do you, when you go into this mode of connection with the energy in your writing, do you feel as if the presence is there? Do you feel an altering of yourself? Do you feel like a shift within the room or the vibration of where you're working when you are working in this mode of connection?
Yeah, I do, and I try to keep it around as much as possible because it feels so good. I sort of go into a vibration that I experience in meditation. That vibration that I get in meditation is the same thing that I go into when I'm writing, and it's an absolutely wonderful feeling, feeling that presence. And I think it's the same feeling that you can feel with people who are in body, who have that same kind of energy, because the energy is about the connection anyway. But in terms of, you know, Jesus, and I know that people do shy away, some people shy away from the name that has anything to do with Jesus, but the fact is that this book portrays him as totally human like all of us, and it poses that we don't take our beliefs with us when we leave here anyway. We take the love we found from having them, so it doesn't really matter what faith you have or no faith. This book is really about a better understanding of one's own spirituality. And God is in every religion if people who are in that religion have love in their hearts, because that's the bottom line, love. And that makes no attempt to preach religion at all. And I've just had to say that over and over to get through to people that, after all, when Jesus lived, Christianity didn't exist. If you'd asked him what it was, he wouldn't have known what you were talking about. He was a man that long before a church formed around that idea of his life. So he had a life, you know, the same as we all do.
Now, throughout the book, my goodness, I never use that word. Throughout this book, you've chosen several characters out of the Bible. And one of them you have quite a bit in regard to Lazarus. You have John, you have Paul, you have is there a personal affinity that you had prior to writing this book with these personalities that you've already, you know, felt that you resonated with prior to this book? Or did these entities, these energies come to you as you were writing the book?
It came to me as I was writing the book, but I believe there is much more to our lives than we understand, and so probably there is a connection somewhere in my past emotional history with these people that they even wanted to be talked about in my book. So it just happened, you know, I just opened my heart, and then I heard who it was going to be about, and then I wrote the chapter, and some of the names I didn't know about, I didn't know anything about really, because I don't know what's in the Bible. I just, I know what I knew in Sunday school, and that's it. And so some of the names, you know, like the soldier, I had no idea, you know, the soldier that came through that that Jesus saw on his way to the crucifixion. Those kinds of things, I've asked about this over and over because people are so curious about this idea of channeling. And just recently I was having this conversation where I was asking, when the artist has a vision, the artist produces the painting that's in his vision, but I don't have a vision of what's going to happen. I just open my heart and it comes through me. So I'm sort of just being like a vehicle to the artist performing. The artist is performing through me. I am not the artist. And it's a very subtle difference, but there is a difference there that I didn't really understand myself until recently. And it was kind of humbling to say, well, the artist is performing through me. It's not really me performing, but it's it's gratitude that the artist wanted to perform through me. So it's a different, it's kind of, you know, it's hard to explain something that I don't even understand. And I heard the answer, well, you don't need to understand it and you don't have to understand it. You just allow yourself to let me share my ideas.
And it comes across as, you know, the way it's I read it, it did feel very, you know, channeled, like it was through you. And so the information that came through was something that was very, it was very timely in regard to what seems to be going on in a visual and emotional level within our world today. When you were writing it, did you have an inkling of the shift we were undergoing at that time? Did you feel like you were being prepared for another growth or shift? How do you look at what's the information that came through in the book to paralleling really what's going on today?
Well, I felt like it did. I felt like it did all along the whole path. And it wasn't until maybe 2 years ago that I really got into the idea of what was happening with this shift, because I realized there was a huge consciousness shift happening. I mean, just Barnes & Noble shows you this shift vividly, because 25 years ago, if you'd walked into Barnes & Noble and asked for a New Age book, they wouldn't have had any in the store. They wouldn't even have been sure what you were talking about. And now they have a huge sign on the wall, New Age, and there's a whole wall of just New Age books. So there has been a huge mass consciousness shift. And I believe that the earth is going through a shift, and we are mirroring each other. The mass consciousness is mirroring the shift that the earth is going through. And I've heard this wonderful message about what is happening to the earth, that and that we only have to understand our human bodies to understand the body of the earth, and that when we have a rebirthing in the body, the mother has labor pains that are mild and far apart at first, and as the birth approaches, the labor pains get closer together and more intense. And I believe that that is reflecting in the world today exactly what is happening with the eruptions,
right,
and the tsunamis and the earthquakes. And I believe that they will be getting closer together and more intense, because the earth must stay healthy to continue. It must rebirth to continue and be this game where we come here and play, and it has to regenerate. So it will do what it has to do whether we like it or not, and we can either resist it or we can go with the flow and be glad that the earth is rebirthing and be happy that that we can watch it and it can be a teacher to us as it does so. And I believe that if we're listening and not resisting, that we're going to be fine and we're going to be okay. And it's just I don't like the negative stuff that's going around about this happening, but
right.
And so we need to see it in a way that is productive and not destructive.
Well, and it's also whatever is out there just keeps perpetuating itself. And so even though there are horrific things going on, it kind of gives us all the responsibility to not necessarily put our heads in the sand in regard to the things that are happening, but at the same point to really stretch ourselves a little bit more to, you know, express more compassion, more support to fellow man, more empathy, more love, more understanding. So it really does, if you're tapped into your own personal spiritual soul responsibility, it kind of is a little bit of a thump upside the head in regard to, you know, okay, where are your intentions? Where is your energy going? Where are your thoughts? Where is your heart? Where is your love? What I really also benefited in regard to the book is the piece that you really get into in regard to the heart, because there's so many different books out there that really, you know, the catchphrase is opening up your heart. Well, it's a simple statement, but many people, to open up your heart, they're thinking they're opening up their heart, when in reality that heart is still really wounded or really scared or really fearful. And there's a lot of need to really dig deep to unearth that heart sometimes, because it can be kind of, you know, a lot of dirt thrown on it. And you have this piece in here that really talks about how the heart and the emotions are, you know, I look at the heart as my barometer, and I don't look at it as, you know, the organ pumping in my chest, but more of my emotional heart. And it's a barometer of where I'm at in the moment. I could be annoyed, I could be pissed, I could be happy, I could be elated. Wherever I'm at in the moment, that's where I have to take my responsibility from. You get into this too in your book. And can you talk to our readers, our listeners a little bit in regard to maybe giving them some insight or opening some tools in regard to how to open up their heart, how to drop into the heart, how to trust the heart? Because when we are coming from that space, we are authentic, we are genuine, we are real, we are true, and that's really what we all want from one another, not only from ourselves, we want it from one another. So, you know, I really find that piece is very, very powerful for our listeners, if you could aid us on this a little bit.
I think it's about remembering that you're enough. That you're enough exactly mm-hmm. as you are. That there is no such thing as perfection. It's the only idea that you're perfectly fine the way you are. Being honest, seeing the bigness of your own heart comes from seeing the bigness in other people's hearts. It's all about that mirror idea that whatever you want to feel in yourself, you need to give to others. There is no way you can have a feeling unless you're willing to give it, because you attract back to yourself. You attract people back to you who are mirroring who you are. So if you want to see your heart grow, you have to see the growth in others, and you have to see a way of being the person you want to attract back, be the person you admire.
And that is true, very true in an overall context. But I'm going to play a little bit of a devil's advocate here, because say, for instance, you're walking around, you're in a state of love, you're emanating love, you feel really at peace with everything that's going on. You walk into a store, you go up to the cashier to buy something, and you have a very crusty, nasty cashier person who has venom spewing from them, okay? Here you are in your little light bubble, okay? You're thinking, what the hell did I pull in on this one? Because I've been walking in the light for numerous days, unearthed all my crap, got through some garbage. Why am I mirroring this back to myself? I mean, oftentimes it's a test on our authenticity. Are we really being genuine? Are we really coming from our heart? Or are we just going to get nasty back to this person? So let's talk a little bit about how circumstances do come into our life that aren't pleasant, even when we are pleasant. And what is the lesson for that?
Okay, I love this. I love that you brought this up, because I have a personal experience that talks about this idea exactly. When I was in California, I had a woman in my life who was very patronizing. I had to see her. She was at work. I couldn't avoid her. She was right there in my face all the time. And her patronizing attitude was really getting to me. And so I came home, and I said to myself, okay, now is the time you have to put your money where your mouth is and figure out how you have attracted this person into your life. So I took a piece of paper, which I always recommend people do, Lisa, because if you don't do that, ego comes in and tries to distract you and keep you, you know, justify what you did or justify behavior, and which doesn't solve anything, because the universe doesn't recognize justification. So I wrote down all the ways this person was making me feel inadequate, like I couldn't handle the job, like I was too stupid to be in the job, that I wasn't doing a good job, and I didn't know the right answers and the wrong answers. I had a long list of all the ways this person was making me feel. And so then I said, well, who have I given this to? And the minute I asked myself that question, I knew who I had given this to. I had a friend who was going through changes in her life, and every time she would call me with an idea she had about what she might do, I would poo-poo her idea and tell her what I thought she should do. as if I knew. And so I realized that, you know, I realized I was doing this, and so I immediately called her and said, you know, I haven't the foggiest idea what your life is all about or what you're here to do, and I just wanted to reiterate that I support you in whatever you decide, and I apologize for my past patronizing attitude, and so I solved that. But then I also realized there was more to this than that, because I had, when I was getting these ideas, they were so beautiful and they were changing my life, and I really, they were very powerful for me. But I sort of had the attitude that if they were working for me, they should work for everybody. And I was sort of acting as if, now, if you don't get these ideas, what's the matter with you? And so I realized I had this attitude, and I stopped, you know, I said, wait a minute, I don't really know whether other people need these ideas. I only know that I need them. And so I stopped forcing my ideas on others and just waited for other people to be interested in what I was doing, and then I would share what I was doing. So what happened? It was like a completely different attitude. And what happened was this person, this woman, she stayed in my life, and she continued to be the same person she was, but it didn't impact my heart anymore. It was as if I had this aura around me, which I believe we do have, and in that aura were all the ideas that I was pushing out into the universe. And so therefore, if an idea came toward me that I hadn't been pushing out, it bounced right off my aura. I saw it, I noticed it, but I didn't care. It didn't impact the heart. So this is what I call, lots of people have a name for this. I call it the mirror theory or action-reaction. People call it the law of attraction, cause and effect. Whatever you want to call it, it's the pulling of energy back to self. So when this person walked into the store and she meets this crusty salesperson, it may not be something that she invited in that moment, but at some point in her life she invited that by being crusty with someone else.
So by the way, crusty is one of my favorite words when I describe crusty people.
And it's a good one, too. And so this is also about the personal responsibility idea of saying that, it isn't about changing the other person. It isn't about the other person being different, because that person in that moment is being a great gift to you. That person is telling something about yourself, and so therefore it is something to not curse but to be grateful for. But this is all about, you know, it's not always easy to admit that the person is affecting you, because you don't want to say to yourself, well, how could I possibly ever be that rude, you know? But there's always a mirror, because if it bothers you, there's a mirror. If it doesn't bother you, then there isn't a mirror.
And you know, there's a myriad of ways to handle this. And several of them are not wrong ways per se to handle it. However, they're different. And of course, an idealized way of handling it would be coming from this radiating love heart of compassion for this outright crusty individual. However, another way of handling it might be to kind of give them a little bit of a direct, my, it sounds like you're having a very difficult day kind of approach. And in doing that, perhaps there is a lesson they can learn from that, where they can catch themselves on their own crustiness. Because I do believe people cross your path for a variety of reasons, and sometimes they cross your path because there's something they want to learn on a subconscious level or need to learn. And it's not necessary for you to come across in a nasty way, but you can come across in a teaching way or a very helpful way or a very obvious slight little thump on side of the head, because, do we really want to engage and have the next person behind us also get their head chewed off? Not so much. So you want to kind of like stop the spewing before it gets worse. And if it comes to your path, do you ever feel like a certain aspect of, okay, yes, we look within, we look at all our crap, we say, yes, I haven't been so nice to this person, or yes, wow, have I been that nasty to another person? I'll have to go back and recheck myself. But then there's the other piece of, you know, this person was just really nasty. And do you just swallow it? Do you address it? Do you, and how do you address it? Because
I really don't, I'm not, you know, a lot of times I can blow things off and it doesn't affect me. If it does affect me, if it is something that I feel is really a toxic situation, most of the time I will nicely or kindly, I'm most of the time very kind to approaching it. Is there some ways that you would suggest approaching this if it was, you know, if it was a situation that didn't turn around? Because, you know, I go through life making sure that when I'm interacting with somebody, I'm looking at them and I'm coming from integrity and I'm being honest and truthful. And if I feel like that person isn't to me, I will want to inquire more till I get to the heart of that matter or get to the heart of them.
Okay. Now, first of all, I don't want to give the impression that I don't ever lose my cool because I have lost my cool. But I don't think there's a wrong way or a right way to handle a situation like that. There's only the way you want to get back from somebody else. So when you come into a situation like that, you only have to ask yourself, would I want someone else to handle me the way I'm going to handle this person? That's all you need to ask, because if you would welcome the way you're handling it from someone else, you have nothing to fear. If you handle
right.
it you don't want back, then you're inviting the same thing to happen to you. And, I mean,
exactly.
I had a situation where this is so ordinary, but when I go to market, I'm really fussy about my fruit. I like my fruit not to be bounced around. So I asked this woman, 3 weeks in a row, I asked her, please handle the fruit gently. And every week she would plop it down into the bag until finally I just lost it. And I said, that is not what I call gentle. And I sort of lost it in an unattractive way. And so we're all human. But this
right.
We all have setbacks where we say, wait a minute, whatever possessed me to, you know, behave that way. But it just meant that I wasn't being as considerate of someone else in a certain way that, and they were feeling, that they were being ignored. So,
right.
Because she was ignoring me. So,
and also
have a sense of humor. I mean, if you can't laugh
yes.
at yourself, you're in big
Amen.
Trouble.
Amen. Amen. I think that, honest to God, humor gets me through so much crap. I will tell you right out. It's
yeah.
like if you can't develop a thick skin and a sense of humor, then you might as well hibernate, because the world can be a really caustic place at some points, especially when there's so much fear that's being generated around in the ethers.
Yeah.
And there's too much of the fear. And you'll see that being acted out in the abruptness of others. So it is very important, you know, to almost armor yourself with that humor and that light and that positivity before you step outside the door, because there's going to be something that hits you, whether it's traffic or whether it's a crusty salesperson or just someone who's just having a bad day and they're projecting. It takes all forms. So in regard to walking through illusion, which is the title of the book we're talking about today, I want to also look at, you know, illusion can be kind of an easy path, actually, to walk through if you're kind of in a state of denial or a state of just kind of like living life. It's when we start to take responsibility that the reality of walking through life actually becomes a bit more of a challenge. And you have a really beautiful way of describing how, Jesus taught in regard to teaching people from coming from their heart and coming from their authenticity. And you also, I really liked the part of where you got into Lazarus' resurrection. Do you want to talk a little bit about that, of how the perception of it, the perception of the resurrection itself can be looked at?
I believe that any time you fill your heart with a little more love, you have lived a small resurrection. Because I believe that the resurrection that Lazarus and Jesus both lived was that they got to the point where especially Jesus, where he had filled his heart with so much love that he was at one with love completely. And since the body is only a vehicle that is ruled by the mind could tell the body that we're done here, and could go back to the whole of love and oneness with everything that he represented in that moment. And I believe that that resurrection is a gradual process. For what I got the feeling about when I did the chapter of Lazarus was that Lazarus was a very loving person who didn't always acknowledge the beauty within himself, and who depended on Jesus more than he should have, and without acknowledging the beautiful man he was that had attracted Jesus into his life in the first place as to be with him. And so that when he passed on and Jesus came to him and Jesus talked to him like he was still alive, so he was talking to his spirit and telling him, reminding him who he was, reminding him that he was the same love of God that Jesus was, the same love of God that God was, the same love that the same essence was in him. He was powerful enough to be wherever he wanted to be, and it was when he was on the other side hearing these thoughts, he realized that he was the same as Jesus. He was one with Jesus, and then he came back into the body. And so that was his path and his gift to us, or the gift to the people around him, that this was possible for all of us. And that we are beings of love, and we are here to try to remember who we are. We all have God within us. We all have this essence within us. I mean, it is God looking out of our eyes. It is God that keeps our heart beating. It is God that keeps us here, this essence. And we are all in the process of trying to remember who we are. And some people, and this is what I believe Jesus was doing. When he came back from, I believe that he was this person who understood himself this well when he came back from seclusion and had been in meditation. And I believe the next book is about how he learned about meditation. And that when he meditated and when he went deep enough in meditation, he felt his oneness with everything, and he left his body several times. And so he knew who he was when he returned. And I believe that that is when the miracles happened, when people could see this beauty within themselves that was reflected through Jesus. And then, because I've heard the idea over and over that Jesus couldn't heal anybody. It was the people who saw themselves in him who healed, who saw the same love of God in themselves that they saw in him, and then they healed themselves. And so that's what I believe that's about. I hope I answered that.
Yes, you did. There's also a part here in regard to Jesus that you have so many lessons that come through in regard to trusting yourself and trusting your own guide, your own God within, your soul, your essence. And like you were saying with Lazarus, you know, he connected with within the essence of the unity of the oneness that Jesus held. In regard to that essence, what are some of the most powerful pieces that you would like your readers to walk away with in this book? The most powerful lessons or insights in regard to the information that you have gathered here?
Well, one of them is the beauty within themselves. Really, that's what I hope the reader will see, that they are like everyone else, and they have this wonderful essence within them. And it's just a matter of allowing this essence to be, and allowing and recognizing this essence, and acknowledging this essence, acknowledging who we are here, walking through this illusion. We are all God personified in form, and when you realize that, you begin to take responsibility for the God you are being. And I hope they'll learn the same things that I learned, and I hope they'll understand that I went from like hating my mistakes to seeing them as hard-earned growth. And a shift in my focus, and I went from seeing myself as being at the effect of other people to a person who is creating an effect. Because when you're at the effect of others, you're always like, they are the ones who control your life instead of yourself. And when you realize that you are creating your emotional future, now you can't control the picture, because the picture does what it does. but you can control your emotional reaction to it. And really, our emotions are what make us happy or sad. So that's really what's important in the first place. And I realized that, that my attitude toward life and the view I had of my life depended on whether I was happy or not. And so if no matter what happens to you, if you're always finding what's good about it or the positive aspects of it or how no matter how tragic something seems to be, there is always some reason that you are living that can expand your heart. And if you look for it, you will find it. Because your soul doesn't have you where you don't need to be. Your soul is all-knowing. It never has you in a situation where growth is impossible. And so if you're in a situation where growth is impossible, your soul moves you to another situation where growth is possible. And you just have to trust that your soul knows where you need to be. Trust that what you have is what you're supposed to have, who you are with or who you're supposed to be with, and they have something to teach you. When they don't have anything to teach you anymore, there will be other people in your life. And it is living in the moment, trusting the moment, trusting that you are who you need to be for what you came here to do. You're not supposed to be perfect. You're perfectly fine the way you are. And that's what I hope the reader will get out of the book. And I also hope they'll remember that to be accepting of everyone's past, because I finally came to the conclusion that I would rather be with a happy person who disagreed with me all the time than with a miserable person who agreed with me all the time.
Right. And that's and I'm sure that as you went through this process of growth, your relationships also shifted and changed, because no longer could you hold the resonance of, you know, someone who was surly or negative or pessimistic when you are coming from an open heart. So did you find those transitions also take place more on a personal level of your personal life?
Yes, they very much did, and some of them were painful. But because I didn't know how to handle it. You know, people that I'd known for years and suddenly was nothing in common anymore. And it was I got down on myself about it. You know, how can I be so cruel as to not encourage this friendship anymore? But the thing is that if you can't be yourself in a friendship, it's not really a friendship anymore. It's
right.
You just have to let go with love. That's all. You just have to let go in a way that you wouldn't mind being let go of. It's always that same idea. And it always comes back. I always think that that's what Jesus must have meant when he said to do unto others as you would have them do unto you, because he knew it was the only way you were going to get what you wanted. You know?
Right. You can't hold on to the bitter and the anger. And, you know, the one piece that I really find as very important also here is the part of really when we start to go through a shift and we're on a path of spiritual growth, it does not mean that we're not going to find conflict. In fact, my path has shown me numerous conflicts and obstacles and barriers and problems along the path. And basically, the way I look at it, especially now, because I don't see them as much now, but they come up. They come up occasionally, and when they do come up, it's to really tweak where you're at, and it's really to do an inventory of your own heart and your soul and your essence, and it's okay. All right, so here I am, and I'm going through my life, and I've really gotten to this really nice, wonderfully high place that I'm feeling really in sync with. And then all of a sudden, all these people from my past or my past life, my past relationships, no longer fit into my world. So letting go of them can be a very, very cathartic, very painful process. But at the same point, didn't you feel or find that new, more harmonious, more in sync, resonant souls entered your life just as easily as the others were, you know, sent in love onward and upward, that you really started to connect with more of your soul connections or your tribe or your essence of who resonated with you as well?
Yes, and I think the people who were challenging to me were a gift to force me to go deeper within. I mean, you know, I've had those, everybody has those things that you describe of hitting, you know, going, I love your description, going along, everything's great, everything's fine, and all of a sudden, wham! You know, the challenge. It's like yes. The universe saying, "Well, you progressed so beautifully so far. Now, how about this? See how you handle
let's
this.
Let's see how real you really are. You know, let's see how true.
Exactly.
Let's see how much you really talk and
right.
walk. You see?
Right. Right. I always.
Yeah.
I always feel that it's progress when that happens, and it's up to you to
right.
see how you can. You know, it's forcing you to go deeper within, and. But I understand that happening. I mean, it happens. I always
and they are gifts. You know, they are gifts to us because they become such significant teachers. I mean, I look at my ex-husband as one of my greatest teachers in my life because, dear God, thank God I'm not with him. But holy schmoly, did I learn a lot. So it was, you know, there's a real blessing in that. And and he understands that. I mean, I can kid like this with him.
Yeah. Now, I always say, stay away from ever saying, "Well, I sure conquered that," because then the universe says, "Oh, really?"
Yeah. Here's Exhibit B for you to check
right.
that one out. That's very similar to Exhibit A. Yes. Yeah. Been there too. Yeah. I've gotten very clear with spirit, and then. You know, we have a great little dialogue that goes on now, so we understand each other pretty well. But every once in a while, boy, something comes in out of the blue that definitely shakes me to my core. And again, that would be such an elusive thing and such a sticking my head in the sand if I was not to look at those situations that would come up in my life that may not be of perfection or in the desired realm of where I would like to go or experience as teachers and lessons and growth and also to look at it as not the, "Oh, poor me, everything horrible's happening, why am I going through this again?" Instead of looking at it as, "Okay, here's a little blip on the screen of life, let's look at it, let's figure it out, let's figure out how we move around it, you know, climb over it or however we need to plow through and then move on to the path." So, you know, it's a little bit difficult. It's a little bit more difficult if you are not really being true to what you're thinking, feeling, and seeing within yourself. That it becomes a lot easier the more honest you are with yourself and with others.
That's because honesty is the love of God within, and so as soon as you are honest, you're connecting with that essence. And
yes,
and that's what it's all about, connecting with that essence.
Yes.
You can't be being dishonest with yourself at the same time you're connected to spirit. It's an impossible connection. It doesn't happen.
No, it doesn't. Then you're kind of talking to your ego at that point. If you're not coming from an honest place, you're kind of
right.
coming from a place of creating things or controlling things. And the other piece would be that if you are a bit of a control freak, you'll know it really very clearly and very abruptly when you start to make that shift into more of an authentic self, because no longer can you really validate or justify the BS within. So there's that piece in the authenticity and the walking through illusion as well. And this has just been a wonderful little chat we've had today, Betsy. So thank you for being on our show. And
I've enjoyed
thank you very much. Let's tell our audience where they can find you and give them your website and any information you'd like to provide, because you're the author of 6 books and you have another one that you're working on. Is that right?
That's right, yeah. That's right. And they can locate me at www.betsythompson.com. And from there, they can go to LinkedIn or YouTube or Twitter or Facebook or my blog. And they can also connect with me personally because I have an icon there that gives them my email, and I hope that they will. And I'm having a great time talking to people, and I've certainly loved talking to you, Lisa. It's been wonderful. I've laughed a lot. I laugh a lot.
Oh, good. Thank you. That's a great compliment, because if you can laugh on my show, then all is well with the world for today for me. So
yeah.
That's a good thing. Well, it's been a joy. You've been a wonderful guest. And I really, really appreciate you bringing this information to the public and to our listeners today. And again, the book is called Walking Through Illusion, the author Betsy Otter Thompson, and she's the author of 6 books, working on her 7th now. And I want to thank you again, Betsy, so much for being with us on Unlimited Realities today. And God bless you. Have a wonderful week. And God bless your whole journey with the ebooks and your new book and all your books. And I know you're going to influence and impact so many. So thank you so much again.
Thank you.
Have a blessed week, everybody. Take care and have a great week. Many blessings. Bye-bye.